At PNC Private Bank, we want to know what drives you. We call that your why. Once we understand it, we'll build a personalized wealth plan to help you achieve it. So tell us, what's your why? Copyright 2021, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. All rights reserved. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
Here's your money briefing for Tuesday, February 1st. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal. A lot has changed about interviewing for jobs in the past 2 years. They're almost all on Zoom. Questions about workplace flexibility and burnout might be just as important as salary. But when discussing concerns about work-life balance with a hiring manager, how much information is too much information?
The harm in oversharing is just that there is still bias out there. So you don't want someone to not be giving you a job because you're a parent or you have an elderly parent or you have, you know, a disability.
On today's show, we'll examine the new rules of job hunting with WSJ Work and Life columnist Rachel Feinsig. That's after the break.
Not running your business on NetSuite is like trying to sink a putt with a cap over your eyes. NetSuite by Oracle is the number one cloud financial system, giving you visibility and control over your financials, inventory, budgeting, and more. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying ahead of your competition. Over 27,000 businesses already use NetSuite. For the new year, NetSuite has a new financing program for those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Salary is likely to come up in your next job interview, but many candidates are now adding other pandemic-era questions to the list, like where people are working, how flexible the company is, and what are they doing to help prevent burnout. That's a lot to talk about, but knowing how much to share with a hiring manager can be tricky. WSJ Work and Life columnist Rachel Feinsig has been talking with recruiters and hiring managers about how much, or how little, candidates should reveal without short-circuiting their chances of being hired. Rachel, thanks so much for taking the time to chat.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Rachel, a lot of people are still working from home, but a lot of companies have begun a hybrid schedule, a couple of days at home, a couple of days in the office. How has that affected job interviews?
Yeah, so many job interviews these days are still virtual. And so you're not seeing people at work. You're not seeing people interact with each other. Even if you are doing an in-person interview, maybe like half the company is there if the company is on a hybrid schedule. So you really just don't get that same window that you used to.
All right, so let's tackle some of the topics that are likely to come up in an interview. Let's start with pay. We're seeing a worker shortage in many areas, and that's meant a bump up in salary for many new hires, and in some cases, a pretty sizable one. Online research can give a candidate some idea about salary ranges, but how should they approach actually asking for a certain pay level?
You can ask the recruiter what the budget is for a role. And, you know, one of the recruiters I talked to said she's totally open to people having that conversation early on in the process. That doesn't really faze her anymore. It doesn't faze her when candidates request 20 to 30%, you know, higher than the kinds of, you know, offers she was giving out before the pandemic. It really is a new market out there. Obviously, probably don't want to say your current pay. That could box you in. It's, you know, some locations have rules that actually outlaw interviewers asking about salary history. So you really want to start by asking someone what their budget is for the role. So in addition to all of these rules around interviewers not being able to ask folks about their salary history, we're also seeing some locations in the U.S. like Colorado and soon in New York City actually mandating that employers disclose kind of pay ranges for these jobs that they're posting. I mean, some of it will depend on how employers tackle this, you know, in New York City, if we see people kind of setting giant ranges. But that could be a game changer for employees in terms of getting an idea before they even apply to something, you know, as to how much it might pay.
You know, Rachel, the pandemic has reshuffled the list of what employees are looking for in a new employer, and flexibility has risen to at or near the top of the list. But how can someone find out where a company stands with regard to flexibility without, you know, actually asking about flexibility policies?
You can just ask questions about how the company has kind of evolved its approach to work during the pandemic. I think that's a totally natural thing to ask in conversation. You know, when did you guys start working remotely? How has that evolved? You know, how do people balance it if they had, you know, kids, you know, and schools were shut down? What did that look like? So I think that's a pretty innocuous way to get into it.
Now, no doubt working from home has changed people's work setting, but for a lot of people, it's sort of created a patchwork of work and personal responsibilities they deal with throughout the day. How much of that should someone share during a job interview when the topic of flexibility is on the table?
you probably still don't want to share too much, at least not right away. I mean, recruiters told me, you know, you don't want to give people an opportunity for bias. That being said, I mean, the conversation has kind of changed. People also told me you don't have to wait until you get an offer, right? You can bring it up before. And again, you can start out by asking those questions. You might find you don't even need to say, like, I need to leave at 3 p.m. on Fridays. It might turn out half the company is leaving at 3 p.m. on Fridays, and it's no big deal. So I wouldn't do anything right at the beginning. I would wait a little bit. I would fish around with questions at first. But then, yes, I would feel more comfortable, you know, than a few years ago, kind of, you know, bringing up some of the things that you might need. You don't want to offer up too many details of your personal situation. They don't need to hear your life story. And you do want to stress that, you know, you've been able to be successful in your current role, even while juggling all of this stuff. That's kind of the best way to frame it.
Okay, and how about asking what the longer-term plans are for any return to the office? Is that fair game?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone's talking about remote work these days, and it's perfectly fair. And you want to pay attention to the company's response, right? Like, if they don't have a set decision made, I mean, that is semi-understandable. This virus is changing all the time, but you will kind of listen, like, how do they frame it? What are the criteria that they're going to be using to determine when and how people kind of get back to work? And if they're really pretty tight-lipped and they're just kind of like, you know, we're remote right now, experts told me, like, read that as they're just going to get you back 5 days a week as soon as they can.
But even with flexibility, burnout has emerged as a very real concern in the workplace, whether you're at home or in the office. As you discuss a job and the company with a hiring manager, is there a way to learn if burnout is a possibility? You know, are there red flags to listen out for during the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're not going to tell you, like, we are all super miserable here. But there are certain things that you can look for. If they talk a lot about hustling or employees wearing a lot of hats, that could be a red flag. I mean, it also could just mean that it's, like, hard work and then everyone goes home at the end of the day. Or it could be that you're okay with having a job where there are going to be really long hours because you're at the point in your career, you know, where you're open to doing that and you want to kind of, like, potentially climb the ladder in that way. But if it's something that you're worried about, that those are red flags. Another thing is to look at departures. You know, if there have been a lot of departures, obviously there's the question of why are those people leaving? And also the answer that if they are leaving, no matter why it was, if they are leaving, that's more work for the people who are left behind. You know, maybe the people who are hiring you are just desperate to get some of the stuff off of their plate. And when you come on board, that's going to be your job. Also, just take a look at how your interviewers seem. Are they super exhausted? Are they cynical? You know, are they able to sell the company to you? Or can they just kind of not muster up that enthusiasm? That can be a red flag that they are burnt out and that you might be too if you take this job.
Now, recruiters you spoke with said that if someone will be working in an office, it's okay to ask about the company's vaccination policy and safety protocols. But when someone is first applying for a job, should they list their vaccine status on their resume?
I've talked to a lot of recruiters about this in the last few months, and everyone has told me that you really don't need to do it. There's no need to put your vaccine status on your resume. Certainly, if you're interviewing and a recruiter says the company mandates vaccines, you can then share your vaccination status. I think one of the recruiters I talked to, I asked that question to, he was like, I mean, if you want to work there, yeah, I'd recommend sharing it at that point. But you don't need to do so earlier.
And you know, Rachel, the whole point of the job interview is for the interviewer and the applicant to kind of size each other up to see if it would be a good fit for both sides. So looking at all of these issues, what's the harm in drilling down on these points or even oversharing?
I mean, the harm in oversharing is just that there is still bias out there. So you don't want someone to not be giving you a job because you're a parent or you have an elderly parent or you have, you know, a disability. I mean, that being said, I mean, maybe you are in a position where you can use that as a litmus test. You are not so desperate for a new job. And if a company is going to be the kind of company that doesn't want to hire you because you have a kid, you don't want to work for them anyway. And that's also totally fair. But the risk, if you do really need this job, is that you could, you know, give them a reason to not give you an offer.
All right, that's Wall Street Journal Work and Life columnist Rachel Feinsick. Rachel, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.